Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everyone, a quick warning before we get started. We will be talking about the mistreatment of farm animals in this episode, and some of the descriptions are graphic. Okay, here's the show. Last fall, reporter Annie Lowry went to a cattle auction in Northern California. Dozens of cows were being sold at auction that day, but Annie's eyes settled on one, cow 13039.
One of her eyes was kind of swollen and cloudy and rheumy, and it looked like she had an eye infection. Eye infections are pretty common in cows. And the other was completely patched.
Annie's a reporter at The Atlantic, and over the years, she's written a number of stories about farms and farming. She was face-to-face with this cow because she'd gotten information from activists and whistleblowers about mistreatment on one of America's premier organic dairy farms.
And then we took the patch off of the other eye, which was her right eye, I guess. And, you know, the eye was not really in her skull anymore and was very badly damaged. There was a lot of blood and pus. And we didn't end up publishing the photos that I took from that night, but it was a really startling thing to see.
Lots of cows are sold at auction. Some are perfectly healthy, some are not. It's important to note that according to guidelines from the group that certifies regenerative organic farms, cows culled from a herd are not supposed to be sold at a standard auction. But their cow 13039 was anyway. All the veterinarians Annie spoke to said it sounded like the cow had something known as cancer eye, what we'd call ocular cancer.
What was it like being so close to a cow in that kind of distress?
It wasn't pleasant. It was tough. I was going back and looking at my notes, and I just kept on. I can hear myself in my own tape saying, if I had a gun, I would kill this cow myself.
12 hours after Annie saw her, cow 13039 was euthanized with a rifle shot. Cow 13039 came to auction from Alexander Family Farm, one of the best-known organic farms in the country, a farm that's certified humane, non-GMO, grass-fed, USDA organic, pretty much any label that might indicate a farm is following best practices. But what Annie found and what whistleblowers told her is that despite all that, cows were still being grievously harmed. If I wandered into the Whole Foods near me and bought 59 ounces of Alexander milk for $7.69, I'd be doing that thinking I was making the most ethical purchase possible. One that was expensive, sure, but good for my family and for the cows on the farm. But that's not necessarily true.
One thing that interested me here is that Alexander is best of the best. They are certified as best of the best. Their cows, as a general point, have much better lives than the cows that are in conventional mega farms that produce much of the country's milk. But it's really hard to create agricultural products, food products at scale without having some really tough trade-offs. And the math kind of gets balanced on the backs of the animals.
Today on the show, if one of the best farms in the country failed to keep its own promises, how can we trust the system we rely on to feed our families? I'm Lizzie O'Leary, and you're listening to What Next TBD, a show about technology, power, and how the future will be determined. Stick around. When it comes to your finances, go for the credit card that's always there for you. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We're talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
If you were to picture an ideal farm in your head, Alexander Family Farm probably comes close. It's made up of 5 farm sites spread across 2 stunningly beautiful counties in Northern California, with misty fields backed by wooded mountains. Alexander cows are pastured. They live outside, eat grass, and roam alongside elk and migratory birds. What brought Annie to Alexander and to the auction where she met Cow 13039 was a report from the farm advocacy group Farm Forward. They collected the accounts of several Alexander whistleblowers. Annie then talked to the whistleblowers in person.
The whistleblowers' main allegation is that the calves that Alexander was sending to auction were in really bad shape. Some of them had paralysis, some of them were emaciated, some of them had cancer eye, and they were often at auction only getting 5 cents or 10 cents a pound, where a really healthy big cow might get $1, $2. So that's one thing. The second thing they were alleging is that there was mismanagement on the farm that led to the brutalization of a lot of cows there, that cows were, for instance, getting injured and not being found by the herdsmen, and so they were being left in fields with injuries. There was the allegation that in some cases mismanagement led to the mass death of cows. So in one particularly disturbing incident, the cows were supposed to be fed hay. The hay delivery was late, and the cows got famished. And dairy cows are really, really hungry animals because they are producing milk, and they get hungry really, really fast. And so when the truck finally came, they stampeded, and a number of them died at the moment of the stampede, and then some others needed to be euthanized immediately after. And so that was an incident that Alexander acknowledged had happened, and they said that they put new practices in place. And then some of the incidents are what I think of as sort of more common things that come out in these kinds of whistleblower reports. So individual isolated incidences of cruelty that are really hard on the cows. So there's videos or photos of cows being dragged, live cows being dragged. That is specifically not allowed. It's not legal to do that because you can really hurt the cow pretty badly. In one case, a cow had her teat cut off as a treatment for mastitis. And so Alexander, just the broad standards are pretty high, but I think that even in best-of-class farms, stuff like this happens.
We reached out to Alexander Family Farm to ask about the allegations, and they provided us with this statement, saying, "We have been targeted as part of an ongoing campaign by an animal rights activist group that is questioning the validity of humane farming certifications and whose stated goal is to end dairy farming. We first learned about this when Annie Lowry contacted us. We met her in our home, showed her around our dairy farm, shared copies of humane audits and protocols documents, and answered her questions. We are guided by a deep care for our animals, as well as protocols established by experts in the treatment of farm animals. In addition to certifications, audits, and surprise inspections, we have an animal nutritionist, local veterinarians, and national experts in animal welfare who visit our farm on a regular basis, not to mention the hundreds of visitors who visit our farm every year. Caring for our animals is the foundation of what we do. While many of the whistleblower allegations seem to result from mismanagement or cruelty, others reflect how stringent the rules around organic farming are.
One of the allegations is that sick or injured cows didn't get antibiotics. They were withheld. And the reason that that seemed to be happening, according to the whistleblowers, is because the U.S. has draconian restrictions. This is like a national rule. Draconian restrictions on the use of antibiotics in cows or in all livestock. So once a cow has been given antibiotics once at any point in her life, her milk is no longer organic. She's no longer an organic cow. That's not how Canada or the EU does it. And it creates this moral hazard where organic farms will do anything not to give a cow antibiotics. And so, you know, even if the cow could be given a short treatment and then kind of returned to the herd, as would be in other countries, they don't do that here. I would note that per the National Organic Program's rules, which that's, you know, an USDA program, farmers are also barred from withholding antibiotics in order to maintain the standard. But that puts them in a tough position.
I truly did not know until I read your story that that was something that farmers did to maintain the organic standard, that you know, if you had mastitis as a nursing human, you would get antibiotics if it was bad. And that is clearly not the case with cows on a lot of organic farms.
Absolutely. And it's something that, you know, we tried to get into a little bit in the piece. Might be a judgment call as to whether you need antibiotics. What does need antibiotics mean? Does it mean that it's going to take you 4 months to recover instead of 2 weeks? Does it mean that you'll die of sepsis? Because, you know, you as a human, you could get through mastitis or a urinary tract infection or any of a million other really horrible things without antibiotics. But, you know, it might be a lot better for you if you got them. And that's true for cows, too.
You said that Alexander acknowledged that some of these incidents happened. How did they treat the breadth of the whistleblowers' complaints that you came to them with?
They questioned my motivations, the motivations of Farm Forward, which I think is fair. I've written before about the fact that I'm vegan and I don't eat animal products. And so they were kind of like, you know, is this vegan propaganda? And I sort of said, nope, I'm reporting and I'm not trying to use this piece to get anybody to change their dietary patterns. But I thought that that was fair. They questioned the motivations and the knowledge of the whistleblowers. Farm Forward didn't give them the full corpus of photos and videos and everything that they had in the report before they released it. And I think that that was a little bit distressing for them, too. I think it would be distressing for anybody. This is a really big farm. And that means that, you know, the Alexanders themselves don't have eyes on all of these cows. How could they? From the furthest two farm sites apart from each other, it's a 2-hour drive.
Wow.
This is a really big operation. 4,500 dairy cows, 4,000 calves born per year. And so I think you can say reasonably, yeah, like, tough things are going to happen in that circumstance. They have dozens and dozens of employees. I also came to think that we have problems with oversight of farms that exist far outside Alexander, which, again, I really do think they're doing as good a job as anybody of a farm at their scale could be doing in some ways. The national organic rules, I think, are probably not what consumers expect them to be. And the oversight of these certifying agents, they're not really a replacement for a government agency.
When we come back, why isn't there a government agency doing this work? Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long.
What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals so you can get back to doing what you love this spring. Head to factormeals.com/whatnexttbd50 and use the code whatnexttbd50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code whatnexttbd50 at factormeals.com/whatnexttbd50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Coming soon from Slate Podcasts.
So, first it was Dade County.
Voters in the Miami area repealed civil rights for gay people by a 2-to-1 margin.
In the late 1970s, cities around the country began rolling back anti-discrimination laws that protected gay people.
And then it was Wichita, St. Paul, Eugene.
Successful campaigns against the gay community, which shocked us all.
A state senator from California watched the laws fall and saw an opportunity.
Homosexuality is a most repulsive lifestyle.
His name was John Briggs, and he wanted to deliver the anti-gay movement its biggest prize yet.
California realized that they were coming for us.
I'm Christina Cotarucci. This season on Slow Burn, we'll explore how a nationwide backlash against gays and lesbians led to a massive showdown in California.
Now it's something called Proposition 6, the Briggs Initiative.
It would call for firing any teachers in California who practice homosexuality.
Your life as you knew it would be destroyed.
We've got to fight back. We can't let this happen in California.
The Briggs Initiative would be the first statewide vote on gay rights.
Gay rights now! Gay rights!
With so much at stake, young people became activists.
We were all coming out all day long, every day.
And activists became leaders.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you.
Slow Burn, Season 9, Gays Against Briggs. Out May 22nd, wherever you listen.
If we lose here, it'll be 50 years before we ever get back up again.
Like the drag queen say, take out the earrings, sharpen the nails, there ain't no going back.
If you want to understand what is happening in the United States right now, you really need to understand what's happening with the courts, the law, and the Supreme Court. The battle between democracy and whatever this cage match is that we're witnessing, it's going to be won and lost at the ballot box, but it's also going to be won and lost in the courtrooms. I'm Dahlia Lithwick. I host Slate's legal podcast, Amicus, and we are doubling our output, bringing you weekly episodes from here on in, because how else can we keep an eye on the many trials of Donald Trump, the conservative legal movement's assaults on our rights, the Supreme Court's latest slate of environmental gutting, gun safety eviscerating cases on the docket. So follow Amicus wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes dropping every Saturday morning.
One of the reasons why I wanted to have you on was not just to talk about this particular farm and these particular allegations, which are horrifying, but what we can see and think by looking at the system and the kind of backstops that are supposed to exist. So you said in your piece that the animal welfare laws on these kinds of operations, on an organic farm, conventional farm, et cetera, are a regulatory void. What did you mean by that?
There is no national federal legislation regarding the treatment of farm animals on farms. There is federal legislation regarding the treatment of animals in transit, in auction, and at slaughter.
Why does that gap exist?
The laws are really designed to protect humans, not animals. So the slaughter laws are to make sure that diseased animals aren't getting into the food system. The Animal Welfare Act, it's really aimed at animals in places like laboratories and pet stores. It doesn't apply to animals on farms. So animal cruelty laws at the state level, of which there are many, apply to animals on farms. However, there is this standard that farms can do things differently if it is necessary and justified by the need for the farm to produce food. And what that means is that this is kind of a grotesque example, but you could not spay or neuter your puppy in your house with no anesthetic. That would be animal cruelty. However, a farm can, and farms do, spay, neuter, castrate animals without anesthetic on the farm all the time. They have to produce food. They're dealing with thousands and thousands of animals. And so enforcement for these local animal cruelty laws falls to local police authorities, but they're not performing checks on farms. They often don't know what to look for. The USDA doesn't perform animal welfare checks at all. They have no authority to do that. They do perform some kind of environmental checks, but there's just nothing here. So we could have like a national farmed animal welfare standard. That would really improve the lives of billions of animals in the food system. But it just doesn't exist in the U.S.
In its place, a series of nonprofits have sprung up to audit and certify different farming operations. You might see the label Certified Humane on some products, or one saying GAP Standard, which stands for Good Agricultural Practices.
Because there's this legal void, there are these certifiers, nonprofit certifiers, who set out series of rules, have farms comply with them. They perform audits on the farm, usually about once a year, and then they certify the food. So you've probably, if you shopped at kind of a fancier grocery store, you've probably seen these Certified Humane or GAP Standard 4. But it's a private system. And some of the best certifiers are really, really top-notch. They have animal welfare standards that are set by independent experts. But they're private nonprofits, right? And so they get paid by the farms. Sometimes the farms, you know the people that are auditing them. They often have notice in advance when the audit is coming. And so I came to think that these programs are great for making sure of the big stuff, right? Are you raising your farm, your cows on grass? That's like a pretty easy thing to see. But, you know, as a consumer, do you actually know that like that milk or those that beef or those eggs came through a certified humane process? Like it's just not possible, I think, for these certifiers to be able to say that. The other problem is that now there are a lot of certifiers that are functionally industry fronts. So they are nonprofits that are sort of set up by industry to kind of rubber stamp whatever industry is doing. This gets back to what USDA and the FDA, which has authority here, they just kind of don't care about this that much. They have been sort of tightening up some of the rules, but, you know, they really let people get away with saying what they want about their products.
So thinking about this as a consumer, admittedly one who has no real expertise in discerning between these different labels, what one means, what another means, how do you think about that, or how does one think about that going into a grocery store? Because after all, tons of people are okay paying a premium for something they think is better, better for sustainability, better for their families. How are you supposed to sort through it?
This is really problematic. I think it's really hard to know. You can see all of these little logos and all of these words on these products, but I think this is a place where the government isn't doing a great job at consumer protection. And it's also not really fair to the farms either. Because if you're a farm that's trying to do it right, that is putting in all of this expensive architecture to improve your food products and to charge a premium because, you know, you're actually creating these situations for animals that are higher welfare, it's enraging to a lot of farmers that anybody can kind of say anything. It's not a place where I think that we have enough regulatory enforcement. And I really question whether USDA should be the organization responsible for this at all, right? USDA is there to support American agriculture. Yeah, they're not a cop. You know, this is why the Department of Energy and the Environmental Protection Agency are separate. It is why the CFPB and the SEC are separate from Treasury and the Fed. Usually when we have regulatory enforcement that needs to be done, it's not done by the agency that is also promoting that industry and stabilizing it.
Right. We saw that happen right before the financial crisis. It did not end well.
No, it did not. And so this is a place where I think that there's some really big questions. And the problem is, like, animals can't advocate for themselves. And you have animal welfare groups and farm groups. But, you know, there's not a lot of pressure to rationalize this. And there's not a lot of pressure from consumers who I think often want a better product, but they don't want to think about this. They're not going to vote for it. It's not like anybody's out there picketing for it.
Right. I mean, most of the time I go to the grocery store and we are not vegan. My child, who is a small child, drinks a lot of milk.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to do the best thing, but sometimes pressure is on and you're just going to grab the thing and get out of the store.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's way too much to ask people to make these choices as an individual consumer and to not have some reliable system for them to be working in. Some states have done this. They've created animal welfare laws regarding the state of farmed animals. So things like banning battery cages that laying hens live in, or gestation crates where pigs give birth. I think we could have a lot more rulemaking there. Again, I don't know that it's popular. Sometimes I think that the downside is that you end up with more expensive products, and groceries are really expensive. Inflation has been awful. But I do think that there's a lot of space for us to just set much better baseline standards.
The economics of the dairy industry are also to blame. Research by the USDA found that over the past 7 decades, milk consumption has decreased significantly. Some of that decline is about alternatives, oat milk, soy, almond milk. But more of it is that we just drink less milk overall. And at the same time, being a dairy farmer has gotten vastly more expensive.
One thing I heard from a lot of the dairy farmers that I talked to for this piece, including the Alexanders, is that dairy is hard or difficult or complicated, they kept on saying. It doesn't scale very well because if you have a cow that's being raised for beef, most often what happens in the United States is the cow spends, you know, a year or two out on range with other cows. Mothers and calves are not separated. They just are allowed to live out. They eat grass. Then towards the end of that process, they're brought to a feedlot where they fatten them up, and then they're sent to slaughter from there. But the cows actually have relatively little interaction with people, and they're not messed with that much. They're just allowed to grow, and then they're slaughtered. Dairy cows, on the other hand, they go through this process where they're bred or inseminated, their calf is taken away, they're milked twice a day, maybe 3 times a day, which means being brought into and out of a barn multiple times a day. And then when their production ticks down, they are either sent to slaughter, so they become a beef cow, or they're sent to auction, so something else happens, and then in some rare cases, they're euthanized. So dairy just doesn't scale. It's hard to get more production out of a given set of dairy cows. And an operation with 5,000 dairy cows is not going to be that much more efficient than an operation with 1,000 or 200. And so when I thought about that economic issue, it really made me think differently about dairy and the humane impact of dairy. Because I know a lot of vegetarians, they're like, yeah, I don't want to eat a dead animal.
But I'll drink milk.
But I'll drink milk, right? Or I'll eat eggs. And the truth is that, you know, eggs and milk require something of animal that is a lot more difficult, a lot more painful, requires a lot more probably unpleasant interaction than just like a chicken who's raised and then slaughtered or a beef cow. I do also agree that if we raise the standard for dairy producers, so if we said that all dairy cows in the United States need to have access to grass and pasture, prices would go up a lot. And that would put a lot of pressure on an industry that is facing now fierce competition from things like oat milk and almond milk and all of the other alternatives that we have. And so, you know, it's pretty tough.
What kind of reaction have you had from people in the farming community or from dairy farmers? Have you heard from them?
Got a lot of notes from farmers, a lot from dairy farmers about just how hard this is. A lot of folks have pointed out, and I actually agree with them, that these whistleblower reports are kind of unfair in the sense that they're a point in time and they're not capturing everything that's happening on a farm versus other peer farms, right? We can say that there are these incidents of cruelty, but is there any farm that gets through this without an incident of cruelty? No, I don't think so. But that also made me think that, you know, it would be better if we had a system where we weren't relying on whistleblower reports, if we had better standards and they were being enforced by some agency, by some cop who actually knew what to look for. It's one thing I really do deeply feel is that consumers shouldn't be tasked with sorting through all of this. And, you know, the rules should be clear and transparent for farmers, too. There could be stronger checks, and that would give everybody a lot more confidence in the system. There isn't really a system at all right now.
Annie Lowry, thank you for your reporting and for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Annie Lowry is a reporter covering business and economics for The Atlantic. And that is it for our show today. What Next TBD is produced by Evan Campbell, Patrick Fort, Shayna Roth, and Anna Phillips. Our show is edited by Paige Osborne. Alicia Montgomery is Vice President of Audio for Slate, and TBD is part of the larger What Next family. And if you like what we are doing here, there's a great way to support our work. Just join Slate Plus. Head on over to slate.com/whatnextplus to sign up. All right, we'll be back next week with more episodes. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. Thanks for listening.
Coming soon from Slate Podcasts.
So, first it was Dade County.
Voters in the Miami area repealed civil rights for gay people by a 2-to-1 margin.
In the late 1970s, cities around the country began rolling back anti-discrimination laws that protected gay people.
And then it was Wichita, St. Paul, Eugene.
Successful campaigns against the gay community, which shocked us all.
A state senator from California watched the laws fall and saw an opportunity.
Homosexuality is a most repulsive lifestyle.
His name was John Briggs, and he wanted to deliver the anti-gay movement its biggest prize yet.
California realized that they were coming for us.
I'm Christina Cotterucci. This season on Slow Burn, we'll explore how a nationwide backlash against gays and lesbians led to a massive showdown in California.
Now it's something called Proposition 6, the Briggs Initiative.
And it would call for firing any teachers in California who practice homosexuality.
Your life as you knew it would be destroyed.
We've got to fight back. We can't let this happen in California.
The Briggs Initiative would be the first statewide vote on gay rights.
Gay rights now! Gay rights!
With so much at stake, young people became activists.
We were all coming out all day long, every day.
And activists became leaders.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you.
Slow Burn, Season 9, Gays Against Briggs. Out May 22nd, wherever you listen.
If we lose here, it'll be 50 years before we ever get back up again.
Like the drag queens say, take out the earrings, sharpen the nails, there ain't no going back.